Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap and Mitchell Radio Program. Today is May 6, 2016. I'm Matt, your host, and we're going to be live here for, about the next hour and a half or so, give or take a couple minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to come back. I miss getting on this microphone and talking to y'all. A lot of things happen during the course of the week. A lot of things affect me. I'm sure like they affect you, too. And if you hear some noise, I'm adjusting the microphone because it's just not right. And so with all those things that affect me, like I've told you in weeks past, I have an opinion. And I think this one's going to be somewhat a combination of peeves and just opinions, okay? So, and I'm sure you're going to fall into it real good. You're going to connect with a lot of things that I'm saying. So I want to get into it right now. And it's entitled Cracker Jack Driving. Paul, yes, you're looking at me kind of funny. Cracker Jack Driving. Ladies and gentlemen, I titled this opinion piece Cracker Jack Driving because it appears that many drivers out there must have gotten their licenses from a Cracker Jack box. So in reality, I don't know if this is an opinion piece or an expanded version of some of my pet peeves. So I guess I'll call this one an opinion peeve since it's a combination of the two. Now, I drive a lot. And I usually am driving all day, most of the week, every week I'm driving all day almost and just you get to see a lot of things. And since that's the case, I get to see many other drivers and many dangerous maneuvers being done by a majority of those drivers. So I'm going to give you a short list of maneuvers done by some of those Cracker Jack drivers and see if you can relate to what I'm telling you. Number one. Beating the red light from yellow to red. How many times, Paul's shaking his head up and down. How many times you've been at the intersection, you're waiting for the green light, the light turns green, and I don't know about you, but before I go through that intersection, I look left, I look right, and all of a sudden, wham, a car goes flying by because they were trying to beat the yellow, beat the red. And had I gone out initially on the green, you would have had a major accident. Number two, not yielding at yield signs. It's like, it's there for a reason, everybody. Yield. Number three, turning into traffic right in front of you when there is absolutely nobody behind you for the last two miles. So you're driving up, there's absolutely nobody behind you. You come up to an intersection, a car is there, and it wants to race ahead of you, and you got to brake aggressively so you don't hit them. Number four, not passing when in the passing lane. It's like when a car attempts to pass, but then keeps the same rate of flow, so anybody behind them can't pass either side. Drives me crazy. This should be a pet peeve piece, not an opinion piece. Okay, number five, putting your left blinker on at an intersection after the light turns green. So here you are, you're in two-lane traffic, we'll say, and you decide to stay in the left lane. The car in front of you doesn't have its blinker on. You say, okay, cool, they're going to go straight. Then, as the light turns green, they roll into the intersection, they put their blinker on, and here you have a mile-long traffic right behind you to the side of you, and you can't get out of it, and you're stuck there for three traffic cycles. So that's a pet peeve of mine, too. Driving up to a main road intersection fast, looking like you'll go right through it, right when a car on the main road is at the intersection and giving that driver a heart attack. I'm coming up to an intersection and a car comes flying out from a side street, doesn't look like it's even going to stop. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then they slam on the brakes halfway in the intersection, kind of makes the heart rate go. Seven, tailing a car in a passing zone, but not passing. Eight, just tailgating in general. Nine, driving under the speed limit and maintaining that speed limit no matter what the speed limit is. I'll give you an example. You're in a 70-mile-an-hour speed zone. Person's driving 55 miles an hour. Unfortunately, you can't pass them. So you all of a sudden start coming up to a zone where it's reduced down to 35 miles an hour. And, of course, you being the law-abiding person don't want to be speeding, so you drop down to 35 while that person in front of you continues the rate of speed at 55 miles an hour, gets way ahead of you, and then you got to start the process all over again of catching up and trying to find a passing zone. Number 10. Weaving into the center and shoulder of the road, causing rocks and debris to fly up and hit your car and your windshield. Now, let me be clear. There definitely is a place for these types of drivers. And that place would be California. If you've ever lived in California, you know what I mean. I mean, why even have traffic laws in that state? The people are crazy drivers over there. Now, I think the peeve that peeves me the most is failing to yield. I compare that to waiting in a long line to buy movie tickets and someone just cuts in front of you. There was no courtesy or respect in that. The person was doing it for self-gain. Now, the driver who does not yield at a yield sign has a few things going against them. One, they're in traffic violation. Two, they're rude and impolite. And three, they are reckless and an endangerment to other drivers. Okay. So why am I ragging out on Cracker Jack drivers? That's probably what you're thinking by this time. Well, I'm going to tell you. Listen up close. These drivers irritate me because when I'm driving my manual transmission vehicle, shifting gears, drinking coffee, eating a Danish, and talking on the phone all at the same time, it makes my driving more complicated. I mean, gosh, where's the respect, really? Okay, so hopefully you got the humor out of that last piece there, and that's my opinion piece for this week. And you can call us up here at the studio, 254-773-1400, if you just want to, like, you know, give me a raspberry and say that was pathetic, or give me a chuckle or two, or tell me what's on your mind. All complaints go to Paul. I handle all the good stuff. Okay, so the number here is 254-773-1400. Let's go now into show highlights. Tell you what's going on here. Today's license to carry segment will cover employers. Employers have the ability to restrict license to carry people from carrying into the workplace, but their methods toward employees differ from their customers. So stay tuned and find out the difference. Again, as always, I will read real stories from the NRA's American Rifleman column in the Armed Citizen, and to see what we can glean from those stories. Now, I normally read three stories, but today we have a bonus one, and it was a good one too, so I think you'll find that interesting. In today's PEP section, I will go over three different ego states of people. Now, we all have them, but depending on what happens to you will determine which one will come out of you. It's almost like the Hulk. You know what happens to Dr. Banner when he gets angry, right? He starts turning green. Well, ego states are a good thing to know. In the topic of interest section, I will discuss to you body language and how reading body language can get you a step ahead of your opponent. Now, there are always little signs that can give you away, and this may help in a threatening situation and give you the edge that you need. Today's product spotlight is a delicious Walther PPKS in .380 caliber, and my good friend Arch Kuntz, the owner of ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, I don't know how he does it, but he's always got the ability to get these goodies, the oddball ones, the special ones that look really nice. And so give him a call. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page. And take a look at the picture of the gun that we're going to be talking about. It's a beautiful stainless steel Walther PPKS, beautiful engraving, beautiful wood grips. And check it out. Or give them a call at 254-983-4417. That's ANC Firearms. Arch Kuntz, ask one of the guys there. Tell them I told you to call. Check it out. Go there and buy it. I think you're going to like it. My gun training demo will cover commonly mistaken gun parts. If we know what the parts are and what they do, we can fix them quicker when they decide not to work. So stay tuned for that one. And this one I'm very excited about, ladies and gentlemen. My special guest today will be Dr. Neil Trent III, Colonel retired. I'm very excited about this interview. Dr. Trent talked to me at a gun show, and I knew immediately that I had to have him on the show. He will be discussing possibilities versus probabilities. It's details like this, ladies and gentlemen, that make you the winner and not the loser in many things. So this is a don't miss interview. Now, Paul, I think you got a call on the line. What are we talking about here on the phone? What do they want? More pet peeves. Pet peeves? Oh, goody. This is Matt. Who am I talking to?
My name is Ryan from Troy, Texas.
Ryan, I bet you got a great pet peeve. What's going on?
My number one pet peeve is people that stop on the on-ramp on I-35.
Now, why in God's name would they do that?
I don't know. I've seen a lot of older folks or people who just don't know how to drive. They stop on the on-ramp when you're behind them trying to speed up to the traffic speed of I-35 to merge onto the highway.
I get you,
and they stop right there on the on-ramp because they freak out about the traffic on my 35.
Well, wait a minute. Ryan, let me one-up you on this one. Let's use your same scenario, except they have a merge lane. It's not like there's some of these roads that merge into the highway and you have maybe 50 feet. There's other ones that have an actual 100-yard, 200-yard lane, so you can get up to speed, and they still stop on the ramp like you're saying.
Yes, that is my number one pet peeve.
Well, fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. Maybe all those drivers who do that may have heard you today, Ryan, and they're going to say, I'm not going to do that anymore. Okay.
I think it's very dangerous.
Absolutely. Well, great. Thanks. You got your license to carry yet?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, you need to come on out to the range out in Cameron there. Friday night, the 13th, we got our round robin competition. Practice your skills. You might even win a prize. So you come on out. Check out aaronsgunshop.com for details, okay?
All right. Cool. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure there's a lot more out there who's got a lot more pet peeves than the ones we just listed. So if you got some, the show is open to pet peeves today about drivers, and feel free to give us a call. But in the meantime, I'm going to move on to the next part of the show here. And I'll tell you what, Paul, what's that all about? You got another phone call?
Jeff says that slower traffic should keep in the right lane.
All right, Jeff gave us a call, and Paul took some information down, another pet peeve, slower traffic. Should keep to the right. That's basically what I was saying. It's kind of opposite of what you're saying, Jeff, but people in the fast lane, they don't pass. Well, they need to get into the right-hand lane, so I totally agree with you there. This is great. We should do a driver ed course on this radio show. Okay. Keep them coming in. Pet peeves. All right, moving to license to carry. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a handful of different people out there. I got a list of four, but I'm going to add one. Those who can't drive. But number one is those who run businesses, those who live off of welfare, those who live on the street, and those who work for an employer. Now, when it comes to working for an employer, and you, the employee, have a license to carry, certain roles may apply to when you're carrying. And that's what this LTC segment's all about. So we're going to go to the general information about the license to carry handgun statute and read number four out of my workbook here. And then we'll go into a little bit more description. Number four, employers. A public or private employer may not prohibit an employee who holds a handgun license, who or otherwise lawfully possesses a firearm or ammunition, from securing the firearm in the employee's own locked vehicle in a company parking facility. The employer is exempt from liability for the firearm. The employer may, however, prohibit an employee who holds a license to carry from carrying into the premises of the workplace. And premises has the meaning provided in Penal Code Section 46035, paragraph F3. Now let's go over some scenarios here. For purposes of this teaching or this application, I will be the employer. And Paul, I'm going to pull you in on this. You're going to be my employee. And ladies and gentlemen, you out there are the customer. Let's give an example. I, the employer, I'm scared to death of being sued. So I don't want to have any of my employees or any customers come in with guns because I'm just a scaredy cat when it comes to guns and I don't want to pay extra fees and I could care less about your personal safety. Okay, that's what it boils down to. So me as your employer, Paul, I say, look, Paul, I know you have a license to carry. So I'm telling you now verbally, which is one way to do it, that I do not want you to come in here with your weapon concealed or open or whatever. Period. That's it. Done. Over. Or, Paul, I'm going to hand you a post-it note. It says, Paul, I don't want any, you know, license to carry, anything like that. No guns coming here, period. Boom. Or, Paul, I could give you a policy manual or a memo that states what I just said, and you technically have to comply, otherwise you're trespassing, okay? Now, you, ladies and gentlemen, you're my customer. I want your money. I want you to buy my product, but I don't want to have to hassle with any liabilities of you having a gun, so I've got to post the proper signage to keep you out of my location. And for you, the license to carry person, it would be Penal Code 30-06 or Penal Code 30-07, or the trump card would be a verbal declaration of that by the owner or a person representing the owner or acting for the owner. Now, if you're a license to carry person and you still don't know your signage, Penal Code 30-06 and 30-07, shame on you. We've done this enough, a lot, over and over, redundant, redundant, redundant. You need to know those and memorize them. But going back to the employee now, I want to make it clear. You do not need, as an employee, to be posted a sign for you 30-06 or 30-07. It can be strictly a verbal command from the boss, the employer, a memo, a post-it note, or something in the policy manual stating to that effect. Okay? So the employer wants your money, doesn't want the guns, so keep an eye out for all those different signs. And let me make something else clear. The state says for somebody to get a license to carry, you've got to jump through a bunch of hoops. You've got to take your class. You've got to be, you know, basically criminal free, right? You don't owe taxes. You're not addicted to drugs. You're a certain age. You live in this state. You do this. You do that to get your license. Then you got to submit all your personal information. There's all these things you have to do. Take a class. Listen to me for 5.5 hours. Shoot your gun. Take a written test. So on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. The state also says for the property owner, the employer, to do certain things to keep a person with a license to carry off the premise, off the property, they have to jump through certain hoops. And that is, if they don't want a license to carry person to come in, they got to post the proper signs. 30-06, 30-07, they must be written properly. Or if it's the employee, they can just say it verbally, post a note, memorandum, policy manual. So there you go. If you want to learn more, go to aaronsgunshop.com. Sign up on the license to carry page. Give us a call here in the studio at 254-773-1400. We can talk about it too. We've got some classes coming up. I'll be talking about that right after the first break, and we can sign you up for those classes. But that's employers and how it pertains to license to carry and working for an employer or just going into an establishment that sells products. Okay. Moving on to our next segment. NRA. In this section, I'm going to read to you three stories, or I'm going to actually read to you four today, from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process, which I think we will today. Now, if you're not a member of the NRA, you might consider becoming one, because the more gun supporters they have, the more muscle they have to stop bad legislation. And ladies and gentlemen, they're a force to be reckoned with. So if you're a member, I don't know, increase your dues or something. If you're not a member, join up. It's not that expensive. Whether you like them or not, what they do sometimes, they're still a force to be reckoned with, and they can help to protect our rights. Now, I've got four stories today. There was one I just couldn't let it go. I usually do three, so we have a bonus one today. These are from February 2008. And the first one reads as follows. Sandra Holsey didn't expect her life to change in a hardware store parking lot. The guy just came up and pushed me real hard with force, like it was a car that hit me. And he was just yanking on my purse. The suspected purse snatcher probably did not notice Holsey's husband, Norman, loading wood into their pickup truck. Norman grabbed his shotgun from the truck and fired a single shot, causing the suspect to run. The sound of the shotgun and the dude burning off, it was funny, said a witness. The suspect flagged down a police officer. The suspect runs up to the police car saying, "Let me in! They're shooting at me!" The guy was so scared he ran to the cop himself. I thought that was pretty funny. Anyway, the deputy said the guy was fearful of Norman's shotgun, so nobody was injured. My commentary. This story is not only informative, but it's funny too. The info part concerns the bad guy trying to take the purse. I tell all of my students who carry purses or merces to not put the gun in the purse for that very reason. If the bad guy takes your purse, he takes your gun as well. The gun should be always attached, if possible, to your person, not in something detachable from the body. And as for the funny part of the story, like I said, the bad guy running to police, I would have loved to have seen it. Story number two. Jason Moore returned home to find a strange car outside. A concealed carry license holder, he grabbed a .45 caliber handgun from his truck and inspected the home, finding the back door kicked in. Once inside, he spied a man in the bedroom. He approached cautiously and spotted another suspect. The second man was holding Moore's own shotgun. "I fired one round and he went down," Moore said. "I immediately dialed 911 and told him not to move. I told them that a lot." The injured suspect complied, but the other claimed to be a gang member who would have Moore killed. When police arrived, they informed Moore that the injured suspect was wanted by U.S. Marshals on drug charges and his accomplice was a suspect in a homicide. It's just scary to know that there were two people that bad in my house and in my bedroom, said Moore. My commentary. One, I would have done the same thing almost identically. Two, the other aspect of this story is to get you and me to realize that anyone from a two-bit criminal to a gang member can enter your home and does not care anything about you in the slightest. So what you need to do is train and get your mind prepared that those people don't care. They have no morals, values, ethics. Story number three. After someone shot through Stephen Troy Stewart's living room window, the frightened Stewart began keeping a shotgun nearby. A month later, the precaution proved a lifesaver. Stewart heard glass breaking. He leapt from his bed, grabbed his shotgun, and walked toward the front of the house. There stood a man with a gun and a gasoline bomb. Stewart shot several times, wounding the intruder. The intruder fled with accomplices and later died. Three suspects were arrested in connection with the crime and suspicion of gang activity. In a jailhouse interview, one suspect told a local TV station they planned to kill Stewart, but he didn't know why. My commentary. One. Okay, good. The homeowner defended himself, but had to fire a few shots to get the intruder. With a shotgun, to me, that seems like poor practice. We need to practice some more so we can utilize just one shot, because in your house shooting a shotgun, it gets kind of messy. Number two, the other part, like I mentioned before, they were going to kill him just for sport. That's the type of people we have to defend ourselves against. So get your mind mentally prepared for those types of people. There's no rationalizing with people like that. Okay, now our bonus story. February 2008. A crime spree was in progress. Two people were already in the hospital with serious head injuries. Police say the suspects in that crime, a 30-year-old man and a 16-year-old boy, chose a disabled man and his wife as their next victims. The suspects broke into the home with a pellet gun and a baseball bat. Despite the homeowner's spinal affliction, he proved no easy victim. He drew a handgun, causing the older intruder to flee. The younger intruder waited for authorities. I'm a life member of the National Rifle Association, and I personally love homeowners being able to defend themselves and their families, said Pulaski County, Missouri Sheriff J.B. King. My commentary. Now on this one, whenever law enforcement promotes people having guns for self-defense, I want to promote them and thank them. So, Sheriff King, kudos to you. Thank you for promoting it. And stay safe out on the road. So those are the four stories from the American Rifleman's The Armed Citizens column. And I'm sure we can glean some things off of that. Practice, mindset, and thank law enforcement for their duty. And the good guys out there protecting us, just give them a thank when you see them. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, after about a minute and a half or so, we're going to be going over our PEP section, which will be going over ego states. That's a listen-to section that has a lot of information, so get your pens and paper ready. We'll see you on the other side. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721. Or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, today is May 7th, 2016. And we're going to be live here for the next hour and two, 3 minutes. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot going on. Last month was an incredible month, all sorts of things going on at Aaron's Gun Shop, and this month is no different. So, but I had to add a few extra things to this month, and I want to promote them to you now. Friday the 13th, we're going to have our round-robin pistol competition. It starts at 7 o'clock exactly. You need to be there by 6:30 for a head count. Okay, it's a $20 entry fee, and who knows what you can win. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of great training. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the homepage. Top of the page is a link for the competition rules. Check it out. You'll have a lot of fun if you come. I'm telling you, a lot of fun. Good people there. Good talking conversations. Lots of fun shooting. May 22nd, Sunday at 2 p.m., I'm going to have a license to carry class. It's Sunday at 2 p.m. That gives you time to go to your church, have lunch, get to the shop. You can either go online to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the LTC page and sign up. You can give us a call here, give us your name and phone number, or give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. But whatever, if you don't have your license and you want to get one, it's going to be a great class. It's $60 for the class. It's about 5.5 hours. It teaches you all the required necessities to get your certificate so that you can apply for your license. May 28th, that's a Saturday. The Saturday class is at 2:45. Reason being is as soon as I get done with the show, I pack up and head back to Cameron. And by the time I get there, everybody's sitting down, ready to go, and we can start the class. That's why it's at 2:45. Once again, it's $60 for the class. It goes over the state-required information that you need to go over, shooting and written test, and it's about 5.5 hours, somewhere around there. Ladies, pay attention. May 29th, Sunday, ladies-only seminar, self- and home defense training seminar. A lot of ladies been asking me for this. Got people signing up already. If you want to learn how to use that firearm and do basic training to advanced training all in the same day, you'll go from the basement to the penthouse when it comes to training. For those of you who are more familiar with your firearms, trust me, you need this training. When the guys are not around, the ladies' hair comes down, okay? And when the hair comes down, they have a blast. They learn a whole bunch more. They're not suppressed by the guy being next to them, okay? So, guys, no offense, but they need to have their space. So, ladies, give us a call at 254. You can call me now, 773-1400. Go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the High Cap Adventure page and look at the Ladies Only Seminar. It's the pink one. It'll be a place to sign up for it. That course is from 8 in the morning until 6 in the evening. It includes a barbecue lunch, and it has all the details of what we do there and a whole bunch more. The part that everybody loves the most is the shoot house. You go in there, and you actually get to learn how to enter rooms, go down hallways, go through doorways. What if somebody's breaking into your house, and somebody's in your house, and you got to go get your children or something, and you're going from point A to point B, and in between there's a whole bunch of danger zones. You got to learn how to engage those zones to the best of your ability to minimize any type of risk to yourself or family members. So check it out. That's going to be May 29th, Sunday, ladies only self and home defense training seminar. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. Check out the testimonial page and the video page. You get to see a lot of other ladies who have come from across the state to take the class. They'll let you know what's their thoughts and how they came a little hesitant and nervous and left emboldened by the training. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've got a favor to ask. If you have some land or know anybody who's got some land that's good for cattle grazing and are wanting to lease it to maintain your ag exemption, I'm going to ask that you call a number I'm going to give you in just a second. We've got excellent people ready to lease today. Minor fence repair is okay. So give us a call at 512-914-7110. Again, if you got some cattle grazing land and you want to lease it, the number is 512-914-7110, and I appreciate that if you can help us out. Thank you. All right, moving on to our pep section. You know, Paul and I were talking on the break when the show, way in the beginning, was only 30 minutes. He was looking at me like, how the heck would you have gotten all this stuff in here in 30 minutes? And, you know, I can barely get it in an hour and a half now, and I'm still talking fast. But anyway, pep sections. Preparedness eliminates panic, and we're going to go over ego states. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when I first came across the term ego states and read about what that is, I thought it was a bunch of hogwash or psychobabble, information to kill time in a license to carry class. But very quickly, I realized how true this topic of information was and how helpful it can be to minimize the potential for conflict between two or more people. And since this is the PEP section of the program, which stands for Preparedness Eliminates Panic, I felt this would be a great topic for discussion now, so that's what we're going to do. I'm only going to give you part of it or go over a portion of it due to time constraints, but if you wish to learn more, you can sign up for one of my License to Carry classes. And again, just go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the License to Carry page for the details. So I'm going to read to you from our trusty little workbook here, Section 5, Conflict Situations, Parent, Child, and Adult Ego States. So here we go. Get your pens and paper ready. A lot of good stuff. Conflict situations, parent, adult, child, ego states. Observation of spontaneous social activity reveals that from time to time, people show noticeable changes in posture, viewpoint, voice, vocabulary, and other aspects of behavior. These behavioral changes are often accompanied by shifts in feeling. In a given individual, a certain set of behavior patterns corresponds to one state of mind, while another set is related to a different psychic attitude, often inconsistent with the first. These changes and differences give rise to the idea of ego states. In technical language, an ego state may be described as a system of feelings accompanied by a related set of behavior patterns. The position is, then, that at any given moment, each individual in a social situation will exhibit a parental, adult, or child ego state. And this sentence right here, ladies and gentlemen, is very important. And that individuals can shift back and forth with varying degrees of readiness from one ego state to another. These observations give rise to certain diagnostic statements. That is, your parent means that you are in the same state of mind as one of your parents used to be, and you are responding as he or she would with the same posture, gestures, vocabulary, feelings, etc. This is your adult means that you've just made an objective appraisal of the situation and are using the thought processes or the problems you perceive or the conclusions you have come to in a non-prejudicial manner. This is your child means that your reaction is the same as it would have been when you were a little boy or girl. The implications are that every individual has had parents or substitute parents, in that he or she carries within themselves a set of ego states that reproduce the ego states of those parents as he or she perceived them, in that these parental ego states can be activated under certain circumstances. So basically, everyone carries his parents around inside of them. That every individual, including children, mentally retarded individuals, and schizophrenics, is capable of objective data processing if the appropriate ego state can be activated. So, everyone has an adult inside of them. And three, that every individual was once younger than he or she is now, and that he or she carries inside of them fixated relics from the earlier years that will be activated under certain circumstances. Everyone carries a little boy or girl around inside them as well. Now, in each situation that induces conflict, our parent and child selves become pretty dominant. We become self-consumed, and all we are concerned with is I, me, and my. These personal possessive pronouns are a real danger sign and work to cut out all adult perspective, which is characterized by the pronouns we, us, and our. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know all this. You really do. You do it on a daily basis. The only thing we're doing now is we're putting scientific terms on them and reading it out. And when we hear it like that, somehow I think, in my opinion, it sticks a little bit better. When we already know what we're doing, but then somebody says, hey, this is what you're doing, and you go, oh, is that what you call it? Then you start to see things. It's like, here's another example. Let's say you just bought a new car. You think, man, this is a neat car. Haven't seen many of these around. Let's just say it's a Ford Mustang, okay? All of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're seeing Ford Mustangs left and right because you've been in tune to it. You've been made aware of it. They're all over the place, okay? So these ego states, you're very well aware of it. You may not have seen it or pay attention to it, but as soon as somebody makes a note that, hey, that's what that's called, all of a sudden you start noticing people's conversations and saying, well, we're in adult conversation right now. Paul, it's like you and I, we're talking, right? And I'm saying, hey, Paul, how you doing? What's going on, buddy? And all of a sudden, for some reason, I jumped down your throat. I said, man, shut up and sit down. You're going to go, who the heck are you talking to? And I want to liken it to this. If you have a scale and it's at the zero mark, and Paul and I are talking to each other on an adult to adult level, the scale is at zero. But if for some reason I jump down his throat, all of a sudden I put a whole bunch of weight on the scale and my side drops down and it's like a seesaw. Paul's up in the air. So we have adult and a parent. I'm sorry, a parent and a childlike conflict situation, because Paul's probably going to go, who the heck are you talking to? We have a total imbalance, which could potentially escalate to more physical and deadly violence. So we don't want to go there. But because we now know and recognize that there was something I said that activated him to be aggressive against me, like I was aggressive against him, I go, hey, Paul, man, I apologize. That was pretty rude of me to say. I don't know what came over me. And hopefully he'll be a nice guy and say, okay, that's all right, man. I know you're probably having a rough day. And then we get the scales to turn back to zero. When the scales of conversation between two people are not at zero, there is a potential for escalation, a potential for conflict. And that is what we teach in the License to Carry class. It's called Nonviolent Dispute Resolution. It's one of the requirements in getting your license to carry. So if you have a better understanding of it, it may be another thing in your toolbox of staying out of trouble. If you see somebody going into a childlike ego state or a parental ego state, you might better know now what may cause that and how to get them out of that situation to avoid potential conflict. Okay? So if you want to learn more, go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the License to Carry page. Sign up now if you don't have a license. If you do have a license, you want to take a refresher course, you can do that too. You won't have to take a written test or anything like that, but you can get to have all the goodies that we teach in the class to refresh you. A lot of people do that too, to be honest with you. And then we also have seminars for people, a group of people who have not taken their license, but they want advanced training combined. We've got our seminars that do that too. It's all one price, and you get both your certificate and the advanced type of training. Body language. I read body language all the time. That is one of my major protecting mechanisms. And the reason for that is that I can make a quick analysis of a situation at a further distance since it's visual, which gives me more time to decipher and read the situation more clearly. An example of this would be like I'm walking down the street and I see a group of four people. They see me, then split into two groups and start walking in my general direction. Well, my experience and my gut tells me that it's a potential shakedown in progress and I'm the intended target. Or it could mean that they saw me, got done with their conversation, and were just leaving each other and coincidentally were headed in my direction. But because I read the situation, it gave me more time to see if they were friend or foe and for me to respond accordingly. So with that, I'm going to read to you an article from Forbes.com on the 7 surprising truths about body language. I think you're going to find this very interesting. And the reason I like this article is because there's a lot of times when I'm looking at, since I do a lot of body language reading, and then I start reading articles on it, I'm opposed to a lot of them because I'm thinking that could be anything. You're being very vague on the body language. But this article here is actually addressing that and saying a lot of times people can misread it. And so after I read this article from Forbes, I kind of like what it said. So let me read it. I guess it's from Nick Morgan, and it's titled 7 Surprising Truths About Body Language. Thanks to TV shows like Lie to Me and so-called body language experts commenting on the candidates during the American election season, a number of misunderstandings about body language have become part of modern culture. It's time to clear the decks. So here goes the 7 surprising truths about body language. Much of what the experts tell you about body language is wrong. This is number one. The biggest misconception perpetrated by many so-called experts is the specific gestures of your hands, say, have specific meanings. Rather, gestures are ambiguous. I always have a hard time saying that word, so I apologize. They can mean anything, many things. If I cross my arms, I may be signaling my defensiveness, but I also may be cold or simply tired or propping myself up with my arms or just getting comfortable. And I could be signaling all those things at once. It's possible to be simultaneously cold, tired, defensive, and desirous of comfort. The misunderstanding comes from two sources. First, the pressure on experts to sound definitive and give an instant analysis for TV in an impatient world more interested in sound bites than truth. Second, the history of the study of body language. It began with what those of us in the field call emblems. Those are rare gestures that do have specific meanings, like the middle finger, the peace sign, the okay gesture, and so on. As a result, it was natural to look at all the rest of gesturing with a bias towards specific meanings. But the number of emblems in all cultures is quite small, and after that, gestures don't reliably signal specific meaning. Number two, the face is a poor place to start reading body language. By the time most of us are adults, we've learned to mask our true feelings, at least as they show up in our face, because we've got to get along at work, at home, and in social settings. So we pretend to be interested, we pretend to smile, we assume a bland expression when we're actually peeved, and so on. Now, Paul, would you say that I have a bland expression when I'm peeved? I think not. Okay, so I don't hide that one very well. Of course, we're not perfect at these polite deceptions. We don't always manage to stifle that yawn completely. But for the most part, the face we present to the world is a polite mask that hides our true feelings. And that's a good thing, usually. It helps us all get along. Three, but the face does sometimes give away your strongest feelings. You can learn to read what are called micro-expressions, sudden leakages of true emotion through the mask of the face with some training. These micro-expressions are fleeting, less than a second in duration, and it takes work to learn how to spot them. And they typically only show up when we're trying to hide a very strong feeling that is at odds with what we're admitting to. The expression of true feeling will suddenly and briefly break out across our face like a flash of lightning in the dark and be gone. Number four, body language signals intent, not specific meaning. What body language does convey with pretty good accuracy is our emotional intent. In fact, brain research shows that whatever we're feeling first shows up in our body and only later, nanoseconds later, in our conscious minds. So if we're hungry or impatient or angry or happy, our bodies know first, and they will be pretty reliable signals of those feelings. Learning to read body language then is a matter of learning to understand other people's intents, not their specific conscious thoughts. And while most of us are reasonably good at masking our feelings in our face, we're not as good as disguising how we feel throughout the rest of our bodies. That's because our bodies know first. By the time the conscious mind recognizes that anger or that joy, it has already shown up in our bodies. And that's what you can learn to recognize and read. Very important to read the body language. Number five, you're much better at reading body language of people you know than any expert. The truly good news is, for people you know, you are already more expert than the experts at reading this intent. Think about it. You know already, unless you're a completely clueless individual, when your spouse is ticked off, or your child is bored, or your boss wants something done now. With people we know, we've already amassed many hours of study, and we know the signs. Of course, even people that we know best can deceive us, but not usually for long and not on the important stuff. Number six, to read body language accurately, don't think about it. As humans, we're hardwired to read other people's emotions and intents. We have mirror neurons in the brains that fire when our unconscious minds register an emotion in someone else. We mirror that other person's emotion so that we can share it and understand it. This expertise developed on an evolutionary timescale and is an important part of our ability to survive as a species. When we see fear, we react instantly and unconsciously in order to be ready to take quick action if necessary. That unconscious expertise is our best ally in reading other people's body language, because you already know what's going on. It's just a matter of bringing that knowledge from your unconscious brain to your conscious mind in order to act on information consciously. So let your unconscious mind do the heavy lifting and work instead of tuning into your unconscious for reliable information about other people's emotional intent. So how do you get started? Simply ask your unconscious mind and wait for an answer. You already know it. This is what people mean when they talk about gut or instinct. It's not magic or the cosmos talking. It's your unconscious mind automatically registering the emotional temperature of everyone around you. Just pay attention. Listen to your gut, and your conscious mind will get it to you. With practice, your abilities will quickly improve. And finally, number seven, We have three brains. Two of them are good at reading body language. Your conscious mind is poor at reading body language because evolution pushed that chore down to the unconscious mind, which is much larger and faster and can handle the job in nanoseconds, reacting to danger long before your conscious mind could. But you have a third mind, literally, in your gut. In fact, your gut has more neurons in it than a cat does in its head. And that brain in your gut is wired to the unconscious mind in your head, so that when you become aware that you're nervous, for example, that's the end of a long process of unconscious mind and your gut exchanging signals about the nervousness. You do get butterflies in your stomach. Your stomach is good at telling you if there's danger or opportunity because it's part of the complex sensing system with your unconscious mind, the one in your head, that is constantly scanning your surroundings and especially other people. So start paying attention to your expertise. That's where the real body language insights will come from. And ladies and gentlemen, I cannot talk enough about reading body language, but you've got to read the body language accurately. Like he was saying, you're crossing your arms. It could be many things. I add crossing the arms with the look on the face. I'm not just going to rely if somebody crosses their arms. You can pretty much tell if somebody crosses their arm, if they're comfortable, they're tired, they're resting, cold or whatever. But if they start blading off to you, start cocking their head a certain way, looking at you with a little scowl and their arms are crossed, it kind of gives it away. So you got to read the whole picture to see what's going on. So we teach that as well in the classes and the seminars. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out the High Cap Adventure page. Sign up on the License to Carry page. Give us a call here in the studio, 254-773-1400. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or just go directly to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Okay. I'll tell you what, Paul, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to do a product spotlight. And at the top of the hour, we're going to have our special guest in here, Dr. Neil Trent III. I can't wait for this interview. It's going to be pretty awesome. So, Paul, take us out. We'll be back in a minute. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Time's ticking away here, so we're going to move right into the product spotlight. I'm very blessed to get to meet people, awesome people, lots of awesome people, and I'm not messing around here, I'm serious, but a good friend of mine, Arch Koontz, great guy, ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, and I don't know how he does it, but because of his love of guns, he has some source, some crystal ball or something to be able to get guns that are beautiful but so hard to get. And we're going to be talking about one of the ones that he's got that's just absolutely beautiful gun. And give him a call, 254-983-4417. And if you want to look at the gun we're talking about, go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, and take a look at the Walther PPKS. It's the stainless one with the beautiful wood grips and the engravings. But what I wanted to do was to give you some reason why, if you're going to pick that gun, why is a good gun? Okay, and I was looking up on guns.com about an author who actually put it through the test, and he wrote it down quite nicely, and it made it easy for me to explain it to you. So I'm going to read his article here. It's called, Reasons Why the Walther PPKS is Still a Viable Concealed Carry Gun. And you can get this one real jazzed up at ANC Firearms. Go check out the website, aaronsgunshop.com. Take a look at the picture on the Facebook page. Walther is an old and well-respected name in the firearms world. The German company has produced many innovative and often imitated designs, from the P38 to the P99 to the PPQ. Those are all good guns. But arguably, none of Walther's guns are as famous or as copied as greatly as the PPK, the scaled-down variant of the Walther PP. One of the first successful double-action pistols in history, the PP series found service with militaries and police agencies around the globe and gained quite the following on the civilian market that continues to this day. The PPKS is arguably the most popular variant of the PP series in the United States, but Walther never originally intended for the PPKS to be produced. And I didn't know this. This is pretty cool. When Gun Control Act of 1968 was signed into law by President Johnson in October of that year, the PPK was deemed too short to be imported overseas, as it stood less than 4 inches tall. Walther remedied the dilemma by slapping the slide and barrel of a PPK on the frame grip of a PP model, and the PPKS was born. This also permitted a seventh round in the magazine, which is why I prefer the PPKS over the six-shot PPK, despite the extended grip making it marginally more difficult to conceal. And that's the author talking. And trust me, that one extra round is not going to make a difference when it comes to concealment. The Walther PPK has historically been a popular gun through the 21st century, but as you know, a lot of people have been looking at the black guns, the polymer guns. So, but this thing is a viable candidate for a concealed carry gun. The author, he went out and took it out for a test run, and the blowback design makes the PPKS an incredible accurate pistol for its size. The author found it to be perfectly true during the time he spent with the gun. At a distance of 20 yards with a 380 ACP 95 grain full metal jacketed bullet, it was consistent putting rounds on paper many times close to the bullseye. That's pretty good. The balance of it, the PPK has been a popular design primarily for its appearance, small size, and the fact that it's iconic, but I'm surprised that the balance hasn't been one of the more noted reasons for why this gun is so popular. The PPKS feels solid and well balanced in the hand, even when not being shot. There's not too much weight forward or back, and the user can appreciate this upon picking up the weapon. Now, it may be a little heavier than some other guns, but the balance of it is still very desirable, and the weight supports accuracy. Both in the shoulder holster and in the waistband holster, the PPKS is a very comfortable gun to carry. And when you draw to fire, the excellent balance becomes even more noticeable and makes the gun actually more enjoyable and easier to shoot. Excuse me. The author says, take my word for it. If you take any polymer pocket 380 today up against a PPKS, you'll find the latter to be the much more desirable to shoot in terms of recoil. When shooting the Ruger LCP, for instance, up against a PPKS, there was no denying that the PPKS was far less snappy and indefinitely more pleasurable for me. In a self-defense situation, this translates to a slightly faster follow-up shot, which could mean the difference between life or death. Now, if you ever find yourself in a situation that's life or death, worrying about disengaging the safety is the last thing you need to have on your mind. At the same time, it makes sense that your gun be safe if it's the one you're going to be carrying around. This is why it makes a lot of sense to use a double action pistol, since the naturally long trigger pull acts like a safety. Now, that one part of it, I would argue, because I'm a 1911 fanatic, it would be nearly impossible for you to accidentally pull the double action trigger of the PPKS in a normal scenario. He's factual in what he says. I just don't personally. I'd rather carry a 1911 if I could. My suggestions would be to carry PPKS in double action mode with the safety off. It's still an incredibly safe gun to carry in this manner with the proper holster. So that's the author who wrote on guns.com talking about the Walther PPKS. And this gun, if you go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the Facebook page, And look at this gun. It's beautiful. Stainless steel, engraved, beautiful grips on it. If you go to ANC Firearms, you can check it out, put it in your hand in person. Call them up at 254-983-4417. See if they still got it on the shelf, because we've been talking about this on the other show. Don't forget, everybody, mark your time slots for 10 o'clock on 105.1 The Ranch out of Cameron FM station. I've got the hour show starting from 10 to 11. It's pretty much a copy of the first hour here, but then we have our interviews on the 1 o'clock time frame on this show. But make sure you listen to us then in case you want to hear some stuff that may not be on this program. Okay, so go to ANC Firearms, check it out. I think you'll like it, and tell them I sent you. Paul, we hit the 1 o'clock minute, so let's take a break. Let's get set up. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with my special guest, Dr. Neil Trent III, Colonel retired. And when we come back, he's got lots of great information. You need to listen to this. This is a do-not-miss interview. So we'll be back on the other side. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's right about the 1 o'clock hour here, and it's interview time. And I'm very fortunate and blessed to have special guest in here, Dr. Neil Trent III, Colonel retired. I met my guest at the April gun show in Belton before I went on the air, and after about 2 minutes, I knew this guy had his stuff together, okay? From his demeanor, conversation, and knowledge of the topic, I knew I had to get him on the show for my interview. Well, to my pleasant surprise, he accepted the invitation, and we set the date for today right now. And who is my special guest? Well, I'm going to read to you his bio, and then I'm going to read to you a part of a letter that he sent me, and we're going to move into the interview part of it. Colonel Neil Trent, Ph.D., retired from the U.S. Army in 2003, having held 11 different ranks across the full spectrum of branch qualifications in combat arms, combat support, and combat service support. He held numerous command and staff positions from platoon to corps level and is an honor graduate of the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College. And you have to explain to me what this is. The USAGOS, there's so many acronyms, I can't get them all. Battle Staff and Joint Firepower Control Course, the Medical Department Officer Advanced Course, the Medical Department Officer Orientation Course, and the Infantry Officer Basic Course. Following his more than 30 years of military service, Colonel Trent spent 10 years as Director, Behavioral Medicine, Family Medicine Residency Center at Darnell Army Medical Center, Fort Hood, holding faculty rank at the Uniformed Services University of Health Services Medical School as Assistant Professor of Family Medicine. He is board certified in clinical psychology by the American Board of Professional Psychology, ABPP, and is a fellow of the American Academy of Clinical Psychology. His advanced specialty training is in neuropsychology, behavioral medicine, and academic medicine. I'm a 50-cent kind of guy, man. Okay, these dollar words. Colonel Trent retired from civil service in 2013 and currently, when not otherwise directed by a higher competent authority within his home to do elsewise, spends his time working on and shooting 1911 pistols. I knew there was something about you I liked. Other than that, he refuses to do much as hit a lick at a snake for the rest of his life other than convincing unbelievers that John Moses Browning should be deified. And I totally agree, man. Okay, let me read one more thing and then we're going to get you on the mic. He sent me a letter after our conversation, and in it, I just want to get us up to speed here. He goes, I mentioned that I had written a few gun magazine articles, one in particular a few years ago, covering the physiological traits of others which may enhance one's abilities to correctly assess a developing situation, as well as a review of the OODA loop as applicable. We're going to be talking about that. We'll explain what that is. After 30-plus years in active duty Army across the full spectrum of combat arms, combat support, combat service support, and 11 different ranks, I eventually learned to favor probabilities. That's what hit me in our conversation. Probabilities rather than simple possibilities, and how to arrive at a decision more rapidly based on the former. Not foolproof by any means, but at least based on a confirmed model instead of just hoping for the best. Hope not being an actual tactic at all. Now, Doctor, welcome to the show. Say hello to everybody out there. I appreciate you coming on the show with us.
Well, I appreciate you having me, Matt. It's a real honor, and in particular, as I told you before, I'm really a big fan of what you do and how you do it. In particular, I think you have more psychological savvy than most shrinks.
Oh, man. If you talk to a lot of my friends, they may not think that, but go ahead.
Well, they don't think I do either. I'm referred to as a blue-collar shrink, but I'm retired, so it's okay.
Okay. Now, when we were talking, it was almost like an instantaneous connection.
Yeah, I felt the same thing.
And you wrote this article here, and we're going to go over a lot of this a lot of the stuff in the article, but I sent you an email that basically said, there's a lot of scientific words in here. I'm the kind of guy, and I've come to realize a lot of my students just want to know brass tacks.
Right.
I get all these technical state terms and legalese, and I read it to them fast, and I go, here's what it really means. And they go, oh, I get it. So that's what we're going to do today, right?
Right. Well, I'm down with that. That's the way I am, too.
You've been listening to the show, and you heard I was going over body language and ego states, and I did that purposely today to set us up because those are different aspects of what we're going to be talking about, which is going to give us the edge. So, Dr. Trent, I want you to tell us, why don't you just take the floor, because we're both of like mind, and start explaining as to why or what you do or how you think about it and why probability is absolutely imperative to understand, learn, and know, as well as possibilities and all the other aspects of it to being safe and trying to get out of a situation.
Right. Well, there's a lot of sources of data, and you cover them very well. The problem seems to be that we have, and this is drilled into us at all levels, we have situational awareness, but it doesn't necessarily mean we have situational understanding. And where probabilities come in is, I like templates because they're convenient. They always work except for when they don't, so
that's right.
Get another template, you know. But anything is possible. The thing is, how probable is it? Now, it's real tricky when you're in a confrontational or adversarial situation. Adrenaline kicks in. It compromises lots of things. Your mind is going 1,000 miles a minute, and you have to find a way to slow it down a little bit. So, and templates are good for that, too. So that you're able to really assess the probability of what's likely to happen next. And that's the reason why I really like the OODA loop, because it's not foolproof. It's probably misunderstood by a lot of people because it doesn't really work the way it's laid out.
I read that in your article, and why don't you explain to everybody what that stands for and what it means.
Right, okay. The OODA loop was developed in, gosh, I can't remember when, but it's a lot of years ago, by an old retired Air Force colonel fighter pilot. And if I'm right, I think John Boyd was at the end of World War II, through the Korean War, and probably into Vietnam. So he's one of those crusty old guys that you kind of look to for wisdom. So he set it up like this. There are four major components in the loop. First is observation. Okay, that's big, and we can go into that in more detail if you want to. Second is orientation, and that's where you're figuring things out and putting things together. Now, in practice, in reality, the way I see it, observation, orientation, they're one big thing together because it's a constant process. So I call it observation and orientation. Now, the third component, according to Boyd, is decision, and that's where you come up with a plan, you know, and hopefully that plan will do a couple of things for you because it's your conclusion. Your time is out. You might have all the time in the world. That's a good thing. More often than not, you don't, but whichever way, time is out. So you want a plan that will, and a set of conclusions that will allow you to unhinge your opponent, possibly create an op tempo he can't stay up with, create chaos for that guy that he certainly won't be able to keep up with, and also be able to execute your plan because you have that much going for you. In other words, you want to take the initiative away from him. So,
and this isn't a long, drawn-out process.
Well, it can be. I had an incident, a confrontational incident, as it was last December, up at Lake Buchanan, and I had a couple 3 minutes to do this. So it was. I can tell you about that if you want to. It was probably 2 or 3 minutes, but mostly, as you teach, I'm sure, you've got to be able to respond in a hasty manner, but still do it in a calculated way. And that's the trick when you're under pressure.
Yeah, there's a fork in the road. How much time do I have? If there's no time, there's two mental thought processes about it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, and Colin Powell wrote an awful lot about that, too. So the final part is basically action. You take the initiative. You do it. Now, what I really, really like about this is that, first of all, you're doing things, even if it's in a short space of time under extreme pressure, you're doing things in a calculated manner. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. You're building confidence while you're doing this. And finally, the thing I like best about it, actually, is that It is something you're able to articulate later, and that's where things tend to go south, is after the engagement. Now you're into the legal system, whether you like it or not. And if you have that template, that OODA, you can more reasonably articulate it to decision makers in the district attorney's office or to police or whoever it may be, why you did what you did and how it laid out, how it unfolded. And I think that's an excellent thing.
I read in your article about that. Yeah. You gave an example, basically, the person saying one thing as compared to breaking it down like you just said. Do you recall that example that you gave in the article? It was you're panicking. Well, I shot him because I was I didn't like how he looked.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's not very descriptive.
Well, I felt threatened, so I just hauled off and shot him. That doesn't fly. You're gonna get billed with a grand jury.
So
that.
What you were explaining was it gives the decision makers the inside of your brain of how you were ticking that shows, hey, I didn't want to do this, but it came to the point where I had to do this, and it was a thought process, not just a reaction.
And as you know, things either slow down or they speed up. Oh, mostly God. They slow down, but it goes so fast. That's why
it goes LEOs, fast, but it seems like it's slow.
Exactly. LEOs will tell you, I didn't really realize I fired a full magazine. I just thought I fired a couple rounds, but that's how things go. So to be able to go back and reconstruct based on a model or a template, I think that's just a winner. So that's why I like this. And it's worked for me once with a couple of mistakes that I made, after action-wise. But
and you're gathering all this knowledge and information from what experiences?
Well, from experience in the Army, where that started was I got to Fort Hood in 97. I reported into a brigade out in 13th COSCOB, and I was supposed to be like the brigade shrink or something. And, wow, it turned out that the commander, the chief of staff, old buddies of mine, they said, you don't want to do that, do you? I said, no, I'd rather not. I like getting back to troops. So they said, well, how about standing up our G2 shop? And I said, okay, I can do that. I've been an S3 at battalion and brigade level, and they're usually rolled in. But they wanted to stand up an intel shop. So good deal. Until the first exercise, command and staff exercise, man alive, there's just more data coming at you than you can shake a stick at. And that's pretty realistic, except you never, in the old Army, you didn't have computers, so you could kind of edit out stuff, but now it's just overwhelming data. So I was asked, are you aware of this? Yeah, I'm absolutely aware of it, sir. They never asked the other question, do you understand it? Because the answer would have been, no, I don't get it, man, it's just too much data. So that's when I started really looking into things like the OODA loop and realized very quickly that situational awareness, good deal, situational understanding, better. So there's got to be mechanisms that we can use even in a hasty situation.
Okay, let's put this in street terms, okay,
sure.
For people like me with a 25-cent IQ, okay? I've got a license to carry because I'm a good Joe, I'm an honest guy,
right.
I want to defend my family, friends, and property, and people out there are bad. Some people out there are bad, and they want to hurt you sometimes. And in your article here, ladies and gentlemen, I was we got an article here from the Concealed Carry magazine. It was from 2006. So if you want to reference that on your Google searches or whatever, you can read the article. But in it, you broke down the different types of paths, psychopaths,
Right.
I'm thinking, should we talk about, because we only have like 15
right.
minutes, should we talk about all the different types of mental attitudes
no.
out there?
No, you could probably post that article if you wanted to. I think the pertinent thing to talk about is really human nature and a knowledge of how things work psychologically. So what we're talking about is personality. Now, that's a psychological term, but it's a real term too. Personality really is the sum total of your assets and your liabilities. Okay, and that's it. It's a stable, enduring way that you scan in the world, think about the world, and stylistically behave in the world. So the more you know about personality traits and how they kind of cluster together, I think the more informed you are, and I think that enhances situational understanding. You don't have to have a PhD or an MD or a DO. It's not necessary. I don't think you hold a PhD in psychology, but you got that great savvy about things, and you know what you're seeing. You can recognize it.
I would call it street smarts.
Well, that's another way to call it, street smarts. I think even though those are great, you can enhance those too by having some knowledge of what's going on in the other guy's brain and what it probably will be. Not necessarily what it possibly will be. That makes sense.
All I know is when we talked, you said one word that just opened up the floodgates of wanting to learn.
It wasn't the F-bomb, was it?
No, that was the second. No. It was the word probability.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always thinking situational awareness.
Right.
And I'm always looking for body language, but I do what you're saying about what's the probability that's happening based on what I'm seeing, body language, attitude, gut feeling, you know, personal experience. But I thought that was the information in the crack. You know, everybody's walking on the sidewalk, but there's all that good information in the crack. And I wanted to talk about that, but I was thinking you got like a person with a paranoid personality. You got to think, what is a paranoid personality and how may that person react in a situation?
Exactly.
And what would be a trait? That's what I was thinking we could hit on.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Now, personalities can rise to the level of a disorder, but more often than not, they're just traits that we may or may not have. But they cluster, and one of the clusters is into this paranoid personality type, whether by characteristics or traits. So here's a person, and we all know them. They're basically very distrustful by nature. They tend to read hidden meanings into otherwise benign remarks. I can think of one many years ago that was on staff with me in 3rd Infantry. I mentioned to him one day, I said, and he was an odd guy like that, very distrustful, suspicious. I mentioned, hey, he came in one day with a high and tight, and I said, hey, cool haircut. And he looked at me and said, what do you mean by that? You know, I said, well, he started getting angry. And he started ramping himself up, and I'm going, holy cow. So I wasn't a shrink in those days, but I could figure out right then that this was an odd guy. So they're people who kind of move either away from people or against people. They're just on guard for any insults, anything that might demean their character. So let's say you're seeing that in a adversarial, confrontational mm-hmm. situation. That's data. That's good data. Because the fact is, while I don't think most of them are just inherently dangerous, and if you can't de-escalate the situation, which is hard to do with a guy like that, you know what? You need to know that if you press them too hard, they can be dangerous.
And that's where the probability comes in.
And that's because one of the components of personality is impulse control, is cognition, emotions, quality of your emotions, range of emotion, appropriateness. But the very last one we talk about is impulse control. You don't have a clue because you probably don't know the guy. Now, if you know the guy, okay, you can decode it real quickly. You don't know the guy. Your mind has got to process that. It's like in the orientation part of the OODA loop. What you're doing there is really just reassessing, developing, as the situation unfolds, developing new information, looking for mismatches between your first understanding, your understanding now, and trying to harmonize all this. And that goes pretty rapidly. But it's data, and it's data that leads to a plan. So knowledge of psychological characteristics that you ought to be on the watch out for, that's data also.
Okay. Dr. Trent, give us, if you can, there's different, I guess, personalities.
Mm-hmm.
I just named one. Can you list us, four or five of them?
I think about three of them I thought were salient at the time I wrote the article.
Because what I want to do is I want to just name them and say, that's what they are.
Okay.
Here's some traits,
yep.
And here's the things that we can look for to say that's a potential for conflict.
Here's one of them, and there's one that would surprise you, too. Antisocial traits. And at the level of personality disorder, we're talking about a psychopath. But there are people walking around who just have those traits and characteristics that probably some brushes with the law. They don't have a whole lot of empathy for other people. They pretty much have a disregard for other people's safety needs or anything like that. They tend to be a little reckless, a little impulsive, very manipulative, very, very much a con artist. And they don't profit from their experience. They keep making the same mistakes over and over again, getting into trouble, but they don't profit from it. You mm-hmm. know, just, so a guy like that who has those type of traits, and you can discern them pretty quickly, even if you don't know the guy, they can be dangerous. And again, it goes back to their impulse control. So you got a void there. You got a blank. So my default setting is that they're dangerous always, except for when they're not.
And how would you counter that?
Well, again, you go back into that OODA loop. That's the data in orientation that leads you to a decision. Now, this is an area where we probably ought to talk about Colin Powell's thinking on this, but we can probably get to that if we have time. Another one would be narcissistic traits. Now, these are people who aren't necessarily well, I could mention a politician, but I won't do that for the sake of people's feelings. Okay. These are people who have an overblown sense of self-worth. They're very arrogant. They also really don't care about you. Your job in their world is to admire them incessantly. Now, the problem with that, usually there's no problem with that because, you know, what the hell. But there's two types of them in my scheme. One's called the inflexible or the arrogant that really they're oblivious. You don't admire them that much or you fail to appreciate their outstanding qualities. They'll just go away and find somebody who does. But there's another type, and this is what you want to be on the lookout for. It's lesser known, but they're out there. They're called the fragile narcissist. Now, they will do one of two things if you fail to honor them. They'll either explode, which is pretty unlikely, but it can happen, and I've seen it happen, or they will implode. Now, if they implode, walk away. You know, stay away from them.
When you're talking implode and depression?
Oh, no, they'll just fall apart. They just have an emotional breakdown. You know, now that's kind of rare, but I have seen it happen. And you know what? That's not a problem for me. I'm more concerned about if I offend them too much by not admiring them. Wow, they're going to haul off and get angry and explode. And I've seen that happen too, depending on their impulse control.
So you could say in the same sentence, when you see somebody with those traits, that there is a possibility that it could happen.
Right.
And depending on the characteristics of whether he implodes or explodes, changes it from possibility to probability.
Right, depending on how they unfold themselves to you. The longer you have, the more they'll unfold. The shorter time you have with them, you got to really be sharp, and just be watching for it. My best advice is, you know, just give them a wide berth, disengage, you know, because why would you? You know, now what's in it for you?
You're a gun guy. You know there's a gun for every situation.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? That would be, what we're discussing now would be like you have all these guns for different situations, but you got them all locked up and you only carry your revolver.
Right.
We have access to all this other stuff that we utilize. That's why I think this is a great conversation, because it opens up our minds to stuff we probably know. We just didn't put names on them. We have really sensed how we can apply it to our self-defense. And what you're telling us is there's all these different things to look at. There's these different weapons that we can use or tools that we can use for our defense if we know them and understand them, we can apply them for probability.
That's what I believe.
And wasn't there another one, though? There's
there's some that are actually mental disorders, because personality isn't where you apply the term mental illness. It's not exculpatory in a court, for instance, you know, for an insanity defense. That they live on Axis 2 in the manual. That doesn't really matter, but over on Axis 1, where you have the true mental disorders like schizophrenics, paranoid schizophrenics, who I think are very dangerous, impulse control disorders, intermittent explosive disorder, manic depressive or bipolar disorder, they bring a lot of challenges. And I think you need to be able to at least recognize those and put that into your planning matrix, you know, because it may be a factor.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time. We've got about 5 minutes left. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to open up to you, Dr. Trent, and that is you were talking about Colin Powell.
Right.
Why don't you explain that? I get the sense that that's an important thing. Let's talk about it.
He's a guy I admire an awful lot. I was obviously on active duty during his time frame. Now, I'll tell you straight up, I think he's a liberal. But he's an old-fashioned American liberal, so I'm okay with Colin Powell. I can forgive him that. But he came up with a method he calls the 40-70 rule. Now, at first blush, you say, what in the world is he talking about? Here it is. When you're under pressure, when you have to make a hasty, critical decision, okay, and you don't have the luxury of time on your side, Powell submits that if you have at least 40% of the available data, and you don't have to have 100% because that leads to a paralysis analysis and all that stuff, mm-hmm. but somewhere between 40% and 70% of the available data that you're confident in, make the decision. Make the decision right then. Now, that's not quite like saying, you know, you need to have a plan to kill everybody you meet. But it's more in line with that in a good way, not a bad way, because it gives you some parameters. And if you think, okay, I'm I probably got about 60% of it. I'm going to make the decision right now because I don't have the luxury to stand you know, exactly.
And that's, where does that come into play in your article? It says here the sixth sense.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to talk about that under observation, but you got five senses, and those are what's in play. You can see it, you can hear it, you can touch it, you can feel it, and sometimes you can taste it. Okay, that's all good stuff. The problem is how to put that all together and enhance it. You know, God gave us a way to do that. It's a little mechanism in our brain that synthesizes it, but that little mechanism breaks down under pressure or stress. So I always believe in the sixth sense. Now, depending on everything else being equal, you're not crazy yourself or anything, you got to listen to that. Because you explained that very well a little bit earlier in the program. Actually, we're perceiving through these five normal senses, and perception is thinking about what we just scanned in. But there's another mechanism going on under the surface called subsection. And that's really important to listen to because your body is analyzing these things. Your brain is, your mind is, analyzing these things that you're not even aware of. So if you get that little feeling in the pit of your gut, start paying closer attention. And that's where I think that sixth sense comes in. Now, it could lead you wrong, you know, but I don't think it's ever left me wrong.
I'd rather go with my gut than pretty much anything. I'd rather be on the safe side.
Yep. Every time I have failed to acknowledge it, I've done something stupid.
Yes, I know. It's weird. I mean, you're wrong sometimes. I know you're going to be wrong sometimes, but the gut seems to be, from experiences you've had in the past, right. This sense, I feel something going on. It's that spidey sense tingling, you know?
Precisely.
So, Dr. Chen, we've only got like a minute left or a minute and a half left. Is there... we need to get you back on again to go over this in more depth. I didn't realize how fast this time goes.
Well, like I always say, you know, light them up if you got them. I'm going to be talking for a while. So.
Is there anything you want to close up with? Anything that you want the people to know out there they can go to? Or is this just...
I would say this, Matt, and I've felt this for the longest time. The fact that we are licensed to employ, potentially, lethal force, what that means is that we're held to a higher standard.
Absolutely.
So I think that the more you know about various things, the more you train, like your excellent classes, and the more you bring into your side of the equation, I think you're going to be better off and be more responsible.
Couldn't argue with that statement at all. Ladies and gentlemen, we got about 30 seconds left, so I want to say this. This interview will be on K10's YouTube channel probably come Monday. If you want to review it, it's got some good information. Give us a call at the shop. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Sign up for a class. Gather some more information. Don't forget, on the 29th of this month, ladies, we've got the ladies-only seminar. You don't want to miss that one. So go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the high cap page. Check it out. Check all the testimonials. But until next week, Dr. Trent, I can't thank you enough for coming on. And we'll get you on again to be more thorough. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, go to 105.1 The Ranch on Saturday at 10 in the morning to catch the first hour of the show. And we'll see you next week. God bless.